minimizing therapy.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Discussions with Delia Farquharson. Delia is a licensed social worker and experienced life coach, dedicated to helping you achieve your goals and become your better self. She specializes in helping others identify the connections between your thoughts, feelings, and actions. Welcome, Delia.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Discussions with Delia. I am your host, Delia Farquharson. And remember, you can call in live. This is a live show on 619-639-4621. But before we get started on our topic for this evening, let me, as usual, welcome my guest co-host, my awesome husband, who's coughing, Raymond. Hi, Raymond.
Hello, dear.
So, the topic this evening is in some ways a continuation of last week's topic, where we said that what we talked about was, you know, taking the risk. And how do you identify what risk to take, you know, in terms of your life and your life's goals? How do you identify what risks are worth taking and when's a good time to take those risks or not? And so today's topic is really about exploring this idea of, well, what is therapy anyway? And could we all benefit from some kind of therapy? And I know you have some different perspective, but let's define therapy in some ways, right? So therapy, when we think about mental health therapy, is used, is a clinical approach, or I don't want to use the word treatment because I don't want to pathologize the whole thing, but yeah, I'll say treatment of mental health conditions, which run the gamut. So it could be anything from our psychotic disorders to people who suffer with mood disorders to anything in between, ADHD, you know, inability, personality disorders, inability to, you know, anything that impairs your ability to function in your daily life may be diagnosable as a mental illness. And so when we think about therapy in that way, that anything that impairs your ability to function and to thrive in your daily life may be something that requires the attention of therapy. Does everybody need therapy?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Well, all right. So you go back to therapy. You said the definition of you need, it's a clinical thing, right? Therefore, you need a trained person. You need to do this with a trained professional. Yeah?
I think, in my estimation, it does not qualify as therapy unless it's being conducted, administered, provided by a trained professional.
Then, to that point, then, I don't think everyone needs therapy.
Okay. Why say you that?
Why say me that? Because I think having a conversation with someone who's going to be open, honest, and objective with you, if that person is not a trained professional, then therefore it's not therapy. So what some people just need, honest feedback, reality check, a friend or a person who's objective and straightforward with them, you know, things are decisions that you're making. It could be, you know, if you want to, as you said, tie it to last week's thing, in terms of the risks that you're taking is not necessarily a financial risk, it's a personal risk, it's a whatever risk, but someone who's going to be open, honest, and straightforward with you and not be judgmental in terms of that conversation of saying, you know, why are you doing that? You shouldn't do that, da, da, da. But more so of sharing objective reasoning in that conversation. Unless, no, to your point, if that person is not a trained professional, then it's not therapy. So therefore, it's just an objective conversation.
Right. But so then we can distinguish between honest feedback, emotional support provided by your network, of the network that you exist within. You know, we can talk about that But that's not therapy.
Right.
It may be therapeutic.
Okay, so
but
there's
it's
a
not
distinction.
Therapy, right? Because it may be therapeutic in that it helps.
Right.
You know, it helps in alleviating or, you know, progressing whatever it is that's going on with you.
Right.
So, but in terms of, is there, you know, is there, does it come to a point in everyone's life where you can use the help of a trained professional to advance or to deal with whatever the issue is that has come up as a crisis or that has persisted in a chronic way? Right? So look, when we go back to, okay, taking the risk. People, we talked last week about whether or not you needed to be like, you know, down there in order to rise. A little bit about that. But, you know, so if you're not making progress in your life, if you, for example, you're just, you seem to be spinning your wheels and you're not advancing in the way that you think you should or making the kind of progress in your life that you feel you should,
mm-hmm.
then maybe, you know, it might be helpful to talk to someone who's a trained professional who can do a comprehensive evaluation and then provide, help you organize your thoughts and, you know, establish your goals and, you know, implement or work on how to achieve those goals.
Okay. True. But again, it deals with, I guess, you as the individual have to then come to that conclusion and make that decision as opposed to what are your other offerings, what are your other options.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're hitting rock bottom. You know, are you then sharing with someone you respect and whose opinion you think you could benefit from? So therefore, you have that conversation, not a therapeutic conversation with, as opposed to with a therapist. Are they advising you? Say, why don't you speak to a financial advisor in terms of getting your financial situation straightened out? You know,
there are many reasons why people could ask to go and, you know, could think about needing therapy.
Absolutely.
You know.
But I think though, the stigma of it being being therapy, a couple of things, honestly. You know, the stigma attached to therapy and why you're there, number from a personal perspective, and probably all others might perceive it, and the cost of seeing, you know, it's not well-funded as a healthcare diagnosis. So therefore, a lot of people who are in therapy or need therapy, I think, has a financial component to it because it's a recurring thing. And a lot of therapists, some therapists, you know, it lasts longer than some. So it's over time. And depending on what is wrong, this is for people now who have diagnosis and need treatment, it does take time. So those are things that people have to come to terms with and be willing to address in such a setting. The stigma, the financial component, whether or not you think this is something that is right for you, whether or not you find the right person that you think you should share your things with, your, you know, whatever you need to share to move forward, you know, as opposed to maybe I need to just talk to my friend or maybe I just need to go see someone else. You know, so I think it's a lot of things when you're asking someone. If you break your leg, you know where to go. It follows. But when you are having, you know, when it's something of questionable mental health issue, and again, some people don't think, only think of mental health issues as those that would probably be considered as severe or chronic.
Right. I think that's where the distinction needs to be made. Is that you don't necessarily have to have a mental health diagnosis because that's one of the approaches that I take to therapy. It's not a problem-focused approach. But again, that's why I kind of made sure to say that anything that impairs your functioning. Because a lot of people who go into therapy may be having trouble dealing with a partner, maybe having trouble overreacting to situations, may catastrophize things, you know, may just different responses that may you know, indicate that, you know, may have trouble opening up, may not be able to nurture intimacy. So these people may have trouble in one aspect of their life. And so it's not that they're not functioning well in other aspects, but if there's one aspect that impairs your functioning in that area or in some other area, then. Mm-hmm. So not necessarily that you are diagnosed with a severe mental illness. And
right.
I think that's where the distinction needs to be, is that not, you know, because you don't have a severe mental illness does not mean you may not need therapy.
Agreed. And I think, but I think though, I think a lot of people, where the general population, like I said, could everyone use some therapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Could everyone use some therapy? And everyone could use some honest talk. Everyone could use some objective talk. I don't think everyone could benefit from a formal professional therapist offering that honest talk.
Okay.
You know, because it's as if then it becomes the norm. It's not unique, special, or different.
What's not unique, special, or different?
If everyone did the therapeutic, the formalized therapy talk, then it becomes, you know, watered down somewhat,
it's
almost
but
vanilla.
No, Raymond, this is where I have to take issue, because one of the things that I think that kind of thinking feeds into the stigma.
Yeah, but I live in the world that says, you know, not the professional side of saying therapy is, you know, I live in the world that says therapy is for people who are mentally ill, and unless you're mentally ill, you don't need therapy.
Okay, but I'm saying that you may need therapy if you feel stuck, or you just feel like you can't get ahead. You have problems eating or sleeping. You know, you feel burdened or overwhelmed. You feel frustrated, you feel worried or nervous, you feel alone or you feel lonely, you feel misunderstood, you feel angry or unmotivated or disinterested. You can need therapy for a trauma that happened. You may, you know, for some kind of major life transition, making a big decision, all of these things, death, grief, all of these things could help you, you know. And it doesn't mean that you have a significant mental illness, but it may mean that you have an issue at this time that you could use professional help. And that's what distinguishes it, is that the help of a professional, a trained professional, to help you deal with it.
Yeah, I hear you. But I think we've all felt some way, shape, or form along the way, or some variation of that throughout our lives. We've all experienced death in our lives and so on. So a moment in time, we have that need. We resolve it in some way, shape, or form, and we move forward. Some people are not able to do that. Now, that's a different case.
Okay, so good evening. We have a caller. Hello.
Hi, good evening. Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Good evening.
Hello. Hi,
yes, I can.
It's Gina Parker. It's Gina Parker Collins. Thank you for the discussion. Thank you. So I came in a little late. You may have already discussed this, but how about changing the way therapy is marketed, particularly to people of color who might have negative connections with that term therapy, and turn it around in a way that represents it as professional development, success strategies, as opposed to a problem-based, I heard you mention that before, as opposed to a problem-based into a personal growth need.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely makes sense. And, you know, when we think about it, many, many therapists also provide the individual or even the corporate coaching. I'm one of those therapists that does that. Because it's more about solutions, being solution-focused rather than problem-focused. I think, though, it's really important to maintain that balance so that we still maintain that clinical, because there will always be that need for people who have significant mental illness, who need that clinical treatment, we're going to say, because someone who is psychotic or actively delusional cannot focus on developing self, on the enlightenment of self, because, you know, they're so busy trying to survive and manage the symptoms of that diagnosis. Do you see? So I think maintaining a balance on both of those things becomes really critical. But I totally agree that presenting the therapy in a more solutions focused, consumer driven, person driven way can always be helpful.
Well, that definitely, you know, I shift the way that I think about therapy just from this conversation alone, in that it can be just a resource for me getting to that goal or that next level as opposed to something clinical.
Right, yeah,
that
absolutely.
That stigma has been removed. Well, thank you very much. It's a very important conversation.
Thanks for calling, Gina. Thanks so much. Yeah, I think it's
my
really
pleasure.
Important.
Bye-bye.
I think it's really important to maintain that balance, to maintain the balance that we need to understand that there are those for whom therapy is really important to just sustain and maintain them in their daily lives, you know, and that's in conjunction. So it's not only psychotherapy, but it's pharmaceutical, it's pharmacology as well, in conjunction with the psychotherapy, for people to really be able to maintain their lives in a sound way.
Right. No, I'm not disputing that. And as the lady said, you know, the idea of the stigma and the approach and how it's presented and the process of therapy, therefore. How it's presented, it's focused on the personal development. It's not saying, you know, it's a treatment. We're not, you know, it's not, you know, it's like you look at things like AA and those type of things, and you show up and you tell me your problems and I tell you what the answer is, and you know, you're right. Moving away from that, where it becomes solution based, and you know, you talk as you described, you have a conversation with the person, and probably that person come to their own conclusion,
right,
in terms of what is best in their lives. But from my perspective, going back to what, you know, the wider thing is, that says, in a formal sense, do we all or could we all benefit from some professional talk?
Okay. You know, and as you were speaking, I just had this thought, and that is, when you think about it, all therapy, it takes essentially the same format, because even for those who are significantly mentally ill, it's about getting them to the highest level of function for them, for that individual, right? For people who have disease of the brain like dementia, it's still about maintaining the best quality of life. You know, in doing therapy with people who have dementia, it's about maintaining the best quality of life for those individuals.
All things.
Yeah, all things considered. So I think, you know, that becomes...
But what is it then? All right, from your professional stance, what is it? You know, we talk about, and as she also said, and you said, the stigma of present it in a way where it becomes more palatable. Present it in a way in which where it becomes easier to digest. Present it in a way so that those who need it will be more attracted to it. What is it that about the way it's presented that causes us to have this ill feeling, regardless, could we say that it transcends boundaries of culture and race and gender, where it's stigmatized regardless?
And
of,
it has been for, you know, when you think
decades,
about, right,
for
hundreds of years, people who were mentally ill were always taken away,
right,
and put away,
exactly,
and hidden,
right,
and there was shame associated with that.
Right.
And so what we're seeing, the stigma that we see associated, that continues to be associated with mental health, is residual of that. But I think it's really important that we continue to fight that. So, like, I as a professional, I don't want to make it palatable for others. I want the system to change to view mental health the same way it views physical health, medical health, in that it's not something for us to be ashamed about. And it's just as important to treat your mental, emotional health as it is to treat your physical, medical conditions. And the same way you wouldn't be shamed into saying, well, I have diabetes, or my blood pressure is high, or I'm being treated for for cancer. The same way that there's no shame associated with that, and people are more inclined to empathize, then the same way I think our society, and that's what we need to combat. That's what we need to fight. Is that stigma, that the stigma associated with having a mental illness that society places on the individual who's ill. And we've seen it where it has had detrimental effects, where people, because of the shame, hide it, you know, do not seek help, and then we have a crisis develop out of that. Yeah. So, you know, I think society plays a role in that. We need to continue to try to beat down that stigma.
Right. Actually, as you were talking about physical illness and diabetes and so on, it brought me to thinking. Sometimes, and I don't know enough to make a statement on that, but I'm going to throw it out there, that a lot of, or some of the illnesses that we have, be it diabetes, be it hypertension, obesity, a lot of these things are connected to mental unwellness. In terms of what we're seeing is a manifestation of, I don't feel good about myself. I eat.
Right.
I don't feel good about myself. I don't exercise. I smoke. I use other substances to dampen that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what folks are going to empathize or sympathize with is saying, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that you have diabetes. I think you should go to the doctor, and I think you should go on this treatment and so on, and join the Diabetic Association and so on. And there are groups for that and group for everything. So, you are absolutely right, where, you know, some of the physical things that we see is rooted and is grounded in, you know, a psychological or mental unwellness of sort that causes us to do things to our physical body or not do things, and therefore it's manifested in that way. I mean, obesity in children is up. Now, one could say, well, it's the things in the food. It's we're more sedentary. We no longer play as much sports. Kids play video games and these handheld devices, therefore. But also, I think, a lot of that also, there's still bullying going on, and there's still other things going on. So, yes, but you won't. Sometimes it gets lost, though. You don't see it.
Right.
You don't see it for what it is.
Right. And
how do you find it?
Right. And I think, so we just bring it back to the question where we started is, you know, I mean, you're right. You know, I mean, are you using unhealthy methods to cope with what's going on emotionally or psychologically?
Right.
Right? And so do we need professional help, a professional to help you with whatever it is that is, you know, affecting your ability to function?
Right. But I guess where I was going with that, the focus then becomes on treating the hypertension, treating the diabetes, treating the obesity, treating the clinical medical issues, what would be considered straight medicine, rather than never probably recognizing what got you there.
And that's why the holistic approach becomes really important when you treat someone, right? And as a concierge therapist.
Okay.
You know, that's one of the things, is that you look at the whole person. What's going on, you know, holistically becomes really important. And one of the things that the clinic I worked at was that they started to recognize that the high incidence of people who smoke, who have mental illness, because, you know, it's and the impact that has on their health, on their heart health, and, you know, on their life expectancy.
Sure.
So, you know, beginning to look at it holistically and to recognize that oftentimes people use different methods of coping because there's a mental health or an emotional problem or barrier that's holding them back.
Right. So I think part of the thing, though, not just the stigma, so it sounds as if people who practice traditional medicine need to start bridging the gap of asking other things. It's not just your foot hurt you or you gained 20 pounds in the last 6 months, or you seem to be doing less, whatever, you seem to talk less, whatever. They need to start now figuring out what else is going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be able to then do that referral, because obviously if you did broke your foot, they would send you to the orthopedic guy. If you did do this, or they recognize that, then they would send you to the whatever else. also being able to refer you out of understanding that maybe something is going on.
Right, right. And again, it's a holistic approach. Recognizing, so asking those questions, that's why a comprehensive evaluation, and you're right, that primary care physician and other doctors are recognizing and paying attention to what's going on with the whole individual, what's going on mentally.
You think they are? I don't think so.
Because, when I worked in the clinic, I found like a lot of people did not feel connected to their physical health doctors. And I remember that one of the things, for example, I had patients where monitoring their A1C levels and their diabetic numbers was part of the treatment plan that I worked with them on.
What's A1C?
The A1C is the level of glucose in the blood over an extended period.
Oh, okay.
Right? So
it's like a trigger.
Right.
So,
so your glucose may be 90 something today, but what's the percentage over a period?
Oh,
over like a month or 2 weeks.
So it's more of a real check.
Yeah. And so that became part of the treatment plan for those individuals. And that was an important part because it became helpful in helping them manage their eating,
right?
Because then and then seeing the emotional connection to the eating.
Right.
So I think having that holistic approach becomes really critical. So but let's go back, because the question, Raymond, where we started is, do we all need therapy?
No.
Right?
No.
You're contending no.
No.
And I wouldn't say that everybody. So let's rephrase the question. Does everybody need professional help?
No.
Probably not. But it's understanding whether you do or don't.
Right.
And it's understanding if you've tried to solve the problem yourself.
Right.
And you've tried to solve the problem with friends and with family and with peers, and it doesn't seem to be alleviating, then that might be an indication to you that, well, maybe I should talk to someone on a professional level. And I think so that becomes really important, is being able to distinguish, right? How is this impacting me? What have I tried? How has it worked? And, what else can I do?
Right. So I guess it has to be a self-realization. You have to get there. Others might say, you know what, I think you should talk to someone. I think you should call this therapist. I think you should call this psychiatrist, psychologist, social worker, so on and so forth. You should visit this clinic. But until this person gets to that point by themselves to make that step, it's not real.
Yeah. And,
But that's difficult on itself, because you're asking someone to come to terms with that and say, no, there's nothing really wrong with me. I can work this out.
And you know what? Believing that maybe they are strong and resilient enough to do that. But what I'm saying is, I think that it's really important to have an honest discussion with self and to recognize the most important thing is how is it impacting your functioning. And it's if it's having a negative, debilitating impact on functioning, then that's when you might think, okay, I've tried this, I've tried that, I've tried that, that doesn't work. Perhaps it's time for me to seek some professional help.
Yeah, and I guess it probably goes back to last week again. For some people, they have to hit bottom to get there.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I guess we'll end on that note. What the takeaway is that, yeah, perhaps we don't all need therapy. But what I would always tell my consumers and my people who I treat is that even therapists have therapy. Right? Even therapists have therapy.
Yeah.
Because everybody needs to bounce something off. And so, we will continue, to kind of delve in terms of, what's going on. So until next week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Discussions with Delia. Check us out on the web at discussionswithdelia.com and like our Facebook page, Discussions with Delia. Please follow me on Twitter at DiscussionDelia. Thank you again for listening. Peace and blessings.